For decades, our understanding of the Arab world's been shaped by the male voices we predominantly hear reporting on it, and we bring them to you too. And the incredible work that is being done by female journalists, particularly those of Middle Eastern descent, has been rather obscured. But now the voices of 19 of these female journalists have been captured in a new anthology of essays entitled Our Women on the Ground, and we thought this a perfect time to bring it to you as the Middle East sort of ramps up again. It's been described as a book that banishes all manner of silences. And I can tell you it's extremely powerful. Zahra Hankia is a Lebanese-British journalist and the editor of this new anthology. She joined me earlier from London and I offered her a Saturday extra welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
What made you want to collect and collate these journalists' stories?
So I'm an Arab woman journalist myself, and for many years covering the Arab world from both Lebanon and from the United Arab Emirates, I was observing the coverage of the region from both local journalists and Western journalists. And the narrative tends to be dominated in particular by Western journalists, and specifically over decades by males. There have been more women doing incredible journalism in the past few years. And I noticed specifically during the Arab Spring that local Arab women were doing very unique journalism, really putting their lives on the line at the front lines and telling different sorts of stories while facing unique challenges. And my feeling was that we need to really hear more from these women and the challenges that they face, and that we need to give them the space they deserve to tell their stories.
Are you able to be distinctive about the way these women were reporting?
Absolutely. I mean, in some cases, they were almost cornered into approaching news differently because they operate in incredibly male-dominated environments in which they were not able to move around freely in certain spaces that their male or Western counterparts were able to. For example, they would not be able to travel from one place to another without a male chaperone. I'm speaking specifically of countries that are more conservative than other countries in the Middle East, such as Sudan and Yemen and to an extent Egypt. So these women found that they were able to navigate women-dominated spaces and stories that were focused on women simply because they were able to access those spaces because they didn't have other options. So there was one Syrian woman, her name is Zeynep Hayim. She took her cameras into a Syrian gynecological clinic, for example. And you couldn't imagine that story being told by anyone else simply because she had that unique access.
Yes, and of course, to be awfully blunt about it, in the past, and still to some extent, I think the consensus would have been, well, those people aren't major actors, so they don't matter as much. I know that's shifting, but is there an undertone of that?
I wouldn't even say that. I mean, I think to some extent women have other advantages in that they're viewed as less threatening in some of these societies. So, for example, a Sudanese journalist, Shamaya El-Nour, she was able to access the head of a militia who was a major player in Sudanese politics. The militia was the Janjaweed and his name was Musa Hilal. And she was granted access to him because she was considered non-threatening. And she wrote this incredibly important story at the time about his political ambitions. And another reporter for the New York Times, Huwaida Saad, she was able to access ISIS fighters and Syrian regime soldiers in a way that her male or Western counterparts couldn't, because, again, she was a woman viewed as someone that they could trust who was non-threatening. Mm. So she was able to earn their trust in different ways. And these were also major players. So I think there are many ways of looking at this in terms of advantages and disadvantages of the women.
Mm. The very acclaimed CNN journalist, Christiane Annemann-Poor, has contributed a foreword to this book. And she writes, "Women's voices are crucial to gaining a full understanding of the story." What do you think gets lost, really, when we don't hear from women on the ground?
I think specifically in the Arab world and in the Middle East, you really need that intimacy and that nuance for the story because it is such a layered society and the conflicts are so protracted. And you know, to be able to access the full story, you do need access to these women. And as I said before, you know, you can't really access certain spaces as a Western male journalist. And even if you can, oftentimes you won't understand the nuances and the intimacy of, for example, what women are going through in these particular societies during these wars. I mean, in Libya, we had a journalist, Hiba Shibani. She writes about how she turned her attention to covering women's issues during the war there. And she spoke to women who had lost their children in particularly harrowing circumstances. And she was able to really get their side of the story in a way I believe that other journalists couldn't, because she was Libyan and she was also a woman, and she was able to speak to them in a way that they felt that they could really open up to her and trust her. So there's that element of intimacy, I think, and nuance that others can't really get.
One that struck us was the journalist Hannah Alam talking about covering the war in Iraq, which she did for McClatchy newspapers. And she talked about why it was so important to cover the story of Iraq through the eyes of women, because of all the years of bloodshed, Iraq's population of men had been decimated. And the population was now more than half women, many heads of households, because their men were dead or missing. And there's this great line: every time Iraq began to unravel, it was women who worked the hardest to stitch it back together. Now, I mean, I've never heard that before.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's this idea that to cover war and to be a war correspondent or a journalist in any of these societies, what you're focusing on is sort of the quote unquote, the bang bang of the war. And you're going to the politicians and you're going to the areas of power, really, to get the headlines that perhaps Western media organizations are looking for. Whereas what's really happening behind the scenes is quite a different story. And Hannah's essay captures that beautifully, I would say.
Yes, she does actually talk, though, about the other side of it, that there was an unspoken understanding that if you delved too deeply into women's lives, you risked being labelled as soft or missing the point. And I interviewed the journalist Janine DiGiovanni, who covered the Syrian war, and she said exactly that, I'm afraid.
Yes, I mean, it's an unfortunate reality. And I would say, yeah, it's not limited specifically to Arab women or Arab wars or Arab society in general. There's this feeling that, you know, you have to tell the story from a certain angle. And what I'm trying to do with this book is to really say you cannot fully understand any society unless you're really looking at both what men and women are actually telling as a story and as, you know, subjects as well in that story.
Could you tell us about Nada Bakri, please? Her story was particularly striking and encapsulated the fallout of the Arab Spring.
Yes, Nada Bakri is a former journalist, a New York Times reporter who was married to the late Anthony Shadid, who is one of the most well-known foreign correspondents who also wrote for the New York Times. And her essay focuses on how she met, fell in love with, and then lost Anthony Shadid, all in the context of the growth of her own career. And it's an incredibly tragic essay. It's essentially an essay about grief. And it's not an essay that has a resolution. And I think what's crucial in that is that there's no real narrative arc where you come out of the story thinking, oh, this is great. There's some hope here at the end of it. There's some light at the end of it. She's brutally honest about the difficulties she's experienced and the grief she experienced at having lost her husband. And I do think that that reflects in many ways the state of the Arab world today, is that there is a lot of hopelessness. And sometimes you can't dress that up. And, you know, sometimes the pain is that deep. And her essay is just very difficult to read. But I think it's brutally honest and very raw and one of the most important in the book.
Yes. And a strong sub-theme that seems to run through the book is guilt. For instance, the journalist Natasha Yazbek has written this: I need forgiveness every day because complicit doesn't begin to describe it. To write from and in that same pipeline that disfigured my people, my history, my land, my family, to write in the very language and for the people who did it, the fact that my tax dollars fund the wheels on the planes bombing the babies of my people, I need forgiveness every day. How do they work?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's so challenging for many of the women to even address their own challenges, because they're essentially looking at a situation in which they're writing about people who they feel are disadvantaged. And, you know, they're writing about a region that is filled with tragedy. So privilege is a really, really strong theme, in the sense that they feel that because of that privilege, that they're guilty, they're complicit, they're not doing enough. Are they doing enough? And that's particularly present as a theme among the women of dual nationality, because those women have Western passports. And that passport, essentially, for them is a gateway. It's power. You know, they're able to leave the countries that they're covering whenever they need to, whereas the locals are dealing with a completely different set of challenges. So I definitely think, you know, the guilt is, it's a strong theme that each woman experiences it in different ways.
Now, look, it was really heartrending in parts. The story of what some of the women went through to sort of doggedly hang on to their career. The one of the Egyptian photojournalist Iman Helal, a male colleague once told me during one of my night shifts, she writes, that I would never get married. Iman, who would marry you, he asked. Who would marry a woman who works this late around her male colleagues and who spends most of her time in the streets? I will never, ever forget those words. I feel like he was trying to break, not only my determination, but also my soul. Gee, that was hard to read. And the other woman in this situation is Amira Al-Sharif, a Saudi Arabian photographer who spent most of her life in Yemen and whose father is an imam, a Muslim preacher. Can you tell us a little bit more about her? Because I think that she puts it beautifully when she says, "Today at 35, I don't have a husband, but I do have my camera."
Yes, she's an incredibly fierce woman. I mean, you know, she operated at the time. She doesn't live in Yemen currently, but she was operating under incredibly difficult circumstances in which she was a photographer who was essentially unable to move around without a male chaperone. And she found, again, as we mentioned earlier, that she was able to navigate women-dominated spaces. And also, it went beyond that. I think she felt a duty to tell stories of resilience of people in Yemen, specifically of women in Yemen, because so often in mainstream media, we're flooded with imagery that shows famine and shows war. And she wants to show that there's a side of hope and strength there with how women are living their lives and the power that they hold within their own households. And that also goes back to the idea of telling a story in as full a way as possible. And she's saying, look what these Yemeni women are doing, you know, behind the scenes. They're keeping the country going. They're raising their families. They're putting the food on the table where they can. And she finds hope in that. And those are the stories that she tells with her camera.
Final question. Is the development in the right direction? Can you see women gaining respect among their peers, or are they still just really paddling in the shallows, however good their work is?
I definitely think that there are, particularly among certain Western media organizations that are hiring more and more Arab women. They have a definite understanding, a clear understanding that they need to give these women the recognition that they deserve. I still think that more needs to be done, however. I do think newsrooms need to be more diverse, and I do think that locals, particularly those on the ground, stringers and so on, need to be given more protections and treated on the same level as their Western counterparts.
Well, Zahra Hankia, I think you've done them all an enormous service. Thank you very much indeed for putting together this collection of essays.
Thank you so much. This has been a great chat. I really appreciate it.
And Zahra Hankia, H-A-N-K-I-R, is the editor of Our Women on the Ground, Arab Women Reporting from the Arab World, and it's published by Penguin Books.